Hare Krishna. So, we're continuing our reading of the Bhagavatam, 10th Canto, Chapter 6, Text 11 to 13. Text 13 is on the board. So, what I'll do, we'll read Text 13, Sanskrit together, then I'll go back and read 11, 12 translations and purports, including purport to Text 13 also. So, Text 13. So all three verses have purports, but a very small purports. So what I think I'll do, I'll go back and I'll read the translation for text 11, the purport, then the translation for text 12, its purport, and text 13 and the purport. So text 11, unbearably pressed in every vital point, the demon Putana began to cry, "Please leave me, suck my breast no more." Perspiring, her eyes wide open, and her arms and legs flailing, she cried very loudly again and again. Purport. The Rakshasi was severely punished by Krishna. She threw her arms and legs about, and Krishna also began to kick her with his legs to punish her properly for her mischievous activities. Text 12. As Putana screamed loudly and forcefully, the earth with its mountains and outer space with its planets trembled. The lower planets and all directions vibrated, and people fell down, fearing that thunderbolts were falling upon them. Text 13. In this way, the demon Putana, very much aggrieved because her breast was being attacked by Krishna, lost her life. O King Parikshit, opening her mouth wide and spreading her arms, legs, and hair, she fell down in the pasturing ground in her original form as a Rakshasi, as Vritrasura had fallen when killed by the thunderbolt of Indra. Sorry, I forgot the purport to text off. So the purport reads, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur remarks that in this verse, the word Rasa refers to the planetary systems below the earth, such as Rasatala, Atala, Vitala, Sutala, and Talatala. And purport to text 13, Putana was a great Rakshasi who knew the art of covering her original form by mystic power. But when she was killed, her mystic power could not hide her, and she appeared in her original form. Srila Prabhupada ki, Om Gyan Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya, Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale, Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namine. Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pracharine, Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine, Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadadha Shivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Sadeve Parabhakti Titadeve Hare Krishna. So before I start, I'd like to seek the blessings of all the devotees so that I can say something worthwhile. I was asked to give class, and although I was quite sure I wasn't qualified, somehow my mind didn't function properly and I accepted. Had I been more sharp, I would probably say no, because, you know, how much can you wing it when you're on a Vyasa, son? But anyway, I've seen amazing things happen, and I've heard that sometimes Krishna helps devotees. So I'm hoping that Krishna will take over on this occasion and some amazing things will come out of my mouth. But this pastime of Putana is an amazing pastime. In fact, all of Krishna's pastimes are amazing. Not only because they're nice stories to relish, that's one aspect of them. The other aspect is that for one who's intelligent and one who has the mercy of Krishna, they can derive amazing lessons of the pastimes. So this pastime here contains some very instructive lessons that we can also use in our spiritual life. The first important point here, and I'm sure devotees have spoken about this, have elaborately, is the point that Putana wasn't actually a devotee, she was pretending to be a friend of Krishna, and she still, and then she approached Krishna, pretending to be looking to serve him, but actually she wanted to kill him, right? And the other day, Jai Nitai Prabhu explained that we also, as devotees, sometimes can fall within this category, that we have to be very conscious and very careful why we're approaching Krishna, what we're looking to, what we're hoping to achieve in the association of devotees when we come in contact with Krishna. And then Maharaj also, I can't remember his name, he spoke about sometimes in life we see, so we are attracted to certain aspects of material nature, thinking them to be very pleasurable, beautiful. But then he said that all that glitters is not gold. Because Putana also, when she entered Vrindavan, she was very nicely dressed. And Prabhupada explains here that she had this mystic power that allowed her to disguise a demoniac form. So sometimes material nature can come at us at various angles, appearing to be very attractive. And if we're not trained, we can fall for our charms like that. So we may think that giving up the association of devotees and going back into the material world will be better for us. But we see that this isn't the case. That when you look at the TV, when you turn on the news, you see people are completely miserable. Even people that have all the facilities that we desire to have, they're still miserable. Wealthy people commit suicides. The wealthiest countries in the world have to deal with so many tragedies, you know. So although they have all these facilities, they're still not happy because that important aspect, the soul, and taking care of the soul is lacking. So as devotees, we have the great opportunity and the great blessing that we have knowledge of the soul. We also know the process of taking care of the soul. So we should stay in the association of devotees. So Maharaj was making this point that we should be very careful when we come across tempting situations in the material world. And how this is done, it is very simply that we have to intensify our connection with Srila Prabhupada's teachings. Because if it wasn't for Srila Prabhupada's teachings, none of us would be here today. The other day I was discussing with Sutapa Prabhu the difference between causeless mercy. We're saying that, we say that some people say, Prabhupada also said that causeless mercy, it's a whole topic of discussion. What is causeless mercy? Are we here because we, in a past life, because in some shastras he explained that in order to come to devotional service, one must have performed various pious activities in a previous life in order to come to devotional service. But then we also understand that if it wasn't for the mercy of Prabhupada, we wouldn't be here. So how do we reconcile the two? Are we here because we were great yogis in our past life? Do we perform various ashwamedha yagyas in our past lives that made us qualified to come to devotional service? Or are we here because we were just picked up from the gutter by the pure devotee of the Lord? How to find that balance between the two? So one time one devotee asked Prabhupada, you know, it says that we have to, we need qualification to come to devotional service. So what is our qualification? What pious activities did we perform? And then Prabhupada said that I am your pious activity, right? Because when I came calling, you came, and this made you qualified to take the devotional service. So it's because by the mercy of Prabhupada that we're here, and by the mercy of Prabhupada, we'll also stay here. Right? So therefore, Prabhupada gave his books, and he encouraged devotees to read his books regularly, absorbing the teachings, because unless and until we absorb these teachings, Maya will catch us very easily. And this we can see time and time again regularly. See many great devotees, so-called great devotees, big sannyasis, big gurus, just one lapse, one loss of potential, one moment, nanosecond, and they fall down. Maya pounces upon them. Sometimes you may think, oh, I've been in the association of devotees for this amount of years. 10 years I've been a devotee, or 15 years I've been a devotee. I already know how to put on tilak. I know I'm waking up for Mangalati regularly. But if we're not careful, Maya will catch us. Therefore, Prabhupada explains that we have to be extremely careful, extremely humble, and not be proud. Because when things appear to be going well, one devotee explained, it means that the enemy is regrouping. Just like you're in a war. You go through a period where there's heavy gunfire. But then at one point, everything is quiet. It doesn't mean to say that the enemy had decided, okay, we've had enough of this, let's go home. That means they're stopping, they're reloading the ammunition, and then they'll fire again. So when it's quiet, when our spiritual life seems to be going well, we're floating in cloud nine, Maya is working. She's waiting. So therefore, it is said that the more you sweat in times of peace, the less you bleed in times of war. That means that when everything is going good, that's actually when we should be working the most intensely. We should be going deeper in our sadhana, going deeper in the association of devotees. Because the tendency is, when we're going well, when we're giving nice classes, when everyone is worshipping us, right? Because we've been around for some time, we start to take these things for granted. Right? We start taking the association of devotees for granted. And I have practical experience of what it's like when you don't have the association of devotees. It's very difficult to remain focused. Even waking up in the morning is very difficult. Right? Just the other day, of course, because I now live in India. So I came back recently and for various reasons, for some personal thing. So I came back and initially I wasn't able to spend time in the temple, so I had to stay outside of the temple. But then outside of the temple is very difficult because, you know, you don't have the deities there, you don't have a regular morning program, you don't have so many devotees running around. And I found it extremely difficult to remain absorbed. Right? I won't tell you the things that I ended up doing, because this is not confessions, this is Bhagavatam class. But I can assure you that it is extremely difficult to remain focused and absorbed outside of the association of devotees. So we have to be extremely careful, because this Putana demoness is not just out there. The Putana is within the mind also, right? The mind is Putana, actually. The mind sometimes tells us that is our best friend, right? Mind makes itself look like it's our best friend. Yeah? Mind starts to whisper amazing things in our ear and tell us that the rest of the world is against us. We're the best person, you know. You're the nicest devotee in the world. I am the best friend. Whatever I tell you to do, you should do it. And initially, everything is going well, but then we actually see what the mind had in mind. What was planned all along, it was just to make you fall down. Because the mind is not actually a devotee. Bhaktisiddhanta explains that the mind is a non-devotee. That we are carrying a non-devotee around with us. So we say we want to avoid the association of non-devotees, but we actually have a non-devotee within our mind. Right? So we have to be extremely careful, because this non-devotee, if we're not cautious, will give us the wrong instructions. And if we don't have people around us to tell us and let us know when we're straying off the right path, then we'll fall down. We will fall down, guaranteed. So how can we make sure we remain absorbed? How can we make sure that we do not take the association of devotees for granted? This is done, again, by regularly hearing from Prabhupada's books, by regularly hearing from Bhagavatam. So we do that every morning. Right? If you don't do that, you get kicked out of the temple. So some of us come to Bhagavatam class because we have to. But there is something more that we can do. It's not just about attending the Bhagavatam and sitting there and waiting for prasadam time. Because a lot of the time we come and sit in Bhagavatam class and then we're not absorbed. Right? The speaker is speaking and we're wondering, when is he going to tell a nice joke? You see, sometimes the classes that are most attended are those of the most entertaining speakers. When they have the most amazing analogies, they call it masala. Right? The greatest masala, people come and attend the class. When he tells nice stories, people will attend the class. But when he's discussing the Bhagavatam, even if not, he's not the most entertaining speaker, but he's giving some nice insight into Bhagavatam, sometimes we're not so attracted. Right? So how can we make sure that we can actually absorb what the Bhagavatam is teaching us? How can we make sure that we can absorb what the Bhagavatam is trying to share with us? It requires a great deal of endeavor. And if you look at the scriptures, there are various examples of personalities that actually derive the benefits of the Bhagavatam. And by looking at the life, by looking at the examples, we can also understand what we have to do in our own life in order to get to understand exactly how we can get the benefit of the Bhagavatam. So one example from the Bhagavatam is the best example of someone who achieved perfection by hearing the Bhagavatam is Parikshit Maharaj. Parikshit Maharaj had 7 days to live. He knew when he was going to die. And what he did is that he approached the sages and he sat down and he inquired from them. And Shukadev Goswami spoke the Bhagavatam and Parikshit Maharaj achieved perfection just by hearing from Shukadev Goswami. But what were the qualities of Parikshit Maharaj? It's explained that Parikshit Maharaj's most important quality is that he had humility. That was the first thing. Parikshit Maharaj had humility. He had not come to Bhagavatam class in a challenging spirit, thinking that he knew better than the speaker. Right? And because he had humility, Krishna within the heart was pleased with him, and Krishna actually allowed him to understand what was being spoken. And if one does not have the humility necessary to be able to enter the deeper aspects of Bhagavad, you can come to Bhagavatam class for years upon years, and you remember amazing analogies, but your life would not be transformed. All you will have is information. But we're looking for transformation. Right? You will know a huge amount of shlokas, a huge amount of verses, but your life will not change. Right? It isn't about being in that environment, it's about what you do when you're in that environment. What are the qualities you exhibit when you're in that environment? Right? So Parikshit Maharaj, first and foremost quality was his humility. Yeah? He had a high level of humility and appreciation for the speaker. It didn't come in a challenging spirit. And the second thing that Parikshit Maharaj had is that he was constantly questioning. Right? He was asking questions. How does this apply in my life? He wasn't passively hearing. Right? He was actively hearing. He was trying to see how he can apply the teachings of the Bhagavatam in his day-to-day life. Shri Radha Gokulananda ki, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki, Shri Gonitai ki, Srila Prabhupada ki. So he was also hearing actively. He was inquiring. He was asking questions. How does this apply to my life? He wasn't just hearing the Bhagavatam as a formality, as a ritualistic thing. He was hearing the Bhagavatam because he knew that the Bhagavatam was his only way, right? Because he had 7 days to live. Sometimes we come to Bhagavatam class and we fall asleep and we think, oh, no problem, I'll hear a lecture later on. Parikshit Maharaj didn't have that luxury because he knew he was going to die. Do we know when we're going to die? Prabhupada explains, we don't know. Right? Don't know when we're going to die. You all know this story that reporter asked Prabhupada, why are you giving the sannyas to these young men? You know, sannyas is for old people. And Prabhupada said, what does it mean to be old? He said, old means you're going to die soon. Prabhupada said, do you know when you're going to die? You could die any moment. So therefore, you're old also. Yeah? So when we come to Bhagavatam class with that same spirit, that I could walk out that door right now and I could fall. This chandelier right now could drop on my head. It could drop on my head at any moment. Yeah? I could walk out the door and slip a puddle of water there, fall back, crack on the back of my head on the floor, and then that's finished. You never hear about me again. Then when we think like that, I could die at any moment, any moment, any moment. Then when we're hearing the Bhagavatam, we really go deep in the Bhagavatam. Because if we're not hearing properly, then whatever we think about the time of death, that's what we're going to achieve. And sometimes we think, oh, I've been chanting Hare Krishna, but it's the quality of your chanting. Because there's many stories of devotees who are about to leave their bodies, having been practicing spiritual life for like 20, 30 years, and the last thing they thought of, they were thinking about, was not exactly Krishna. One devotee who was explaining, I think it was Kripa Mahaprabhu, that there was one devotee who was nearly drowned in India, in one of the holy rivers, and they managed to revive him and bring him back to consciousness, and they asked him, what were you thinking about? Was it Krishna? Because you're in a holy place, you're about to drown in a holy river, you've been chanting Hare Krishna for so many years, you're going to be thinking of Krishna, of course. And he said, no. What he was thinking about was the theme tune, the melody of one washing up liquid advert he'd heard many years ago when he was a kid that was playing back in his mind. So who knows where he would have ended up. He might have ended up as a washing up liquid salesman or something like that in his next life, which wouldn't be bad because you make money. So whatever we think about the time of death is where we're going to go as devotees. And that will only be affected by the degree and intensity. It's the samskaras that actually affect what we think about. It's not what we do. It's the samskaras, how absorbed you are when you're performing an activity. We remember all these bad things because we were really absorbed in them when we were doing them. And then they leave a deeper imprint on our consciousness. So the same is there with Bhagavatam also. The more seriously we hear Bhagavatam, the more we're likely to remember Krishna at the time of death. And we're going to hear Bhagavatam more seriously when we remember that we don't have much time left. At any moment we could go. Yeah. These are important qualities that we need to develop. Right? And we see that in the Shastra, not only Parikshit Maharaj, many great devotees exhibited these qualities. Devahuti also, she had this quality. She had the humility to sit down in front of her son, right, to hear from him. Right? And she approached him with respect and reverence. She had respect and reverence for what she was hearing and respect and reverence for the person who was speaking. She didn't see him from an external perspective, but she saw him from an internal perspective that the Supreme Lord is speaking to me through this person. And if I have the right consciousness, then whatever answers I need will be given to me. Right? Sometimes you get this. You come to Bhagavatam class, something is playing on your mind regularly. And then the speaker says something and immediately, you know, oh, that's it. That's what I need to do. This is what I was looking for. Because Krishna speaks for anybody like that. Provided we are receptive enough. If we're receptive enough, then we'll get the answer. If we're not, it doesn't matter how great the speaker is. It's not going to go in because our free will is there, you know. If you don't want to be helped, you will not be helped. Like I say, you cannot wake up a person who's pretending to be asleep like that. So Bhagavatam, hearing Bhagavatam properly is very important in order to be able to deal with the putana in the mind. But not just that, also hearing Bhagavatam is one thing, but another aspect of our spiritual life that we need to put a lot of energy and endeavor in is the association of devotees as well. It's like we can get casual, and here in Bhagavatam we can get just as casual in the association of devotees. In the beginning of our spiritual life, we come to association of devotees. All the devotees are great people, pure devotees. Because whenever we walk through, we come as guests, they're always giving us maha sweets. So we like them. Right? Everyone is like, oh, how are you? They'll spend hours speaking to us, wanting to hear what we have to say. In the world outside, people don't care what you have to say. People are too busy doing their own thing. You know. But when we come to the association of devotees, devotees have time for us. So we love them. But then after a while, we see that it's not just about us. It's about Krishna. Then we have to start serving Krishna. And then we become a bit complacent, we become a bit negative, right? We start taking the devotees for granted because that's it. Not only do we realize that we're not a center of attention in the society, then also we start seeing the devotees from an external perspective, you know? Because when you spend too much time with someone, you become familiar with them, and familiarity breeds contempt. So we start to focus on the negative aspects of the association and devotees, the way they speak, the little things they like to do, they snore. Like, so we start to judge them from that external perspective. And then we make offenses. And the more offenses we make in the association of devotees, we start to lose taste for the association of devotees. But because the soul needs taste, you have to associate with something. The devotee explains that marginal potency means you have to take shelter of something. That's what tatashta means. You have to take shelter of the internal potency of the Lord or the external potency of the Lord. So when we lose attraction for the internal potency, you end up taking shelter of the external potency in some way, shape, or form. Right? So then we find that our taste for material activities start to increase. And it becomes difficult to chant Hare Krishna. It becomes difficult to hear the Bhagavatam. It becomes difficult to serve the deities. Because we committed so many offenses to the devotees that Krishna has become upset, like Prabhupada explains here in the previous verse, of the, I think he killed Putana, not because he was angry with her, not because he hated her, but because she hurt so many young children. Right? The devotees are very dear to Krishna, and when we offend them, Krishna has to correct the situation because he promised them that when they come, if they come to his shelter, he will take care of them. And they're here serving him, and then some. Random person comes in and starts to offend him. He has to clean up. He has to remove that person. So then we lose taste of the association of devotees and we start to fall back into our old habits. So we also need to be very careful in the association of devotees. And again, we have many examples on the Shastra. And the foremost example of someone who achieved perfection in the association of devotees is Narad Muni. And you look at the life of Narad Muni, you see, of someone who made advancement very quickly, 4 months, and he became a self-realized soul. And what did he do? Narad Muni maintained a service attitude when he was in association of devotees. Never at any point did he start to look at the devotees as stepping stones or people he could use to further his own interest. He always maintained service attitude. And the second thing he did, his discussions and his interaction with the devotees were focused on Krishna. Right? There was no time spent gossiping about this person or that person, or this person has got a divorce recently. He didn't go to the Bhaktivedantas and start talking about his friends at school, how their parents are doing this and that. He was hearing from them about Krishna. He was discussing Krishna consciousness with them. So if we maintain this attitude also when we're in the association of devotees, we can get the same benefit as Narad Muni, and we can make advancements very quickly. But if we don't, then we can lose taste also, start making offenses like that. So this pastime of Putana, I will end here, there's 5 minutes left. And this pastime of Putana is very instructive. The Acharya spoke many amazing things about this pastime. Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote on the demons in Krishna Leela. Jainitai Prabhu spoke a little bit about that. And when we study this pastime, though Prabhupada left very small purports, in the association of devotees and discuss them, we can derive many lessons. First lesson we derived is that it is possible to come to Krishna with the wrong motivation. It isn't that the moment we put on dhoti and tilak that we become a pure devotee. We will still have some material motives. Right? In the association of devotees, there are people called Kali Chelas, people who are pretending to be devotees, using the association of devotees to enjoy. And this is there everywhere. The holy places, there are people who are there to make money. Just like Putana came to Krishna to kill him, dressed as a Brajavasi. So it's there. The second thing we learn is that although she had the wrong motivation, because she came to Krishna, Krishna purified her. So this is a positive thing. That when we realize that we're not pure, we realize that we still have these anattas within our heart, that we're trying a lot, trying very hard in our Krishna consciousness, but we're still, you know, struggling with little things, we should still remain focused and determined that Krishna is not looking at us like, oh, you dirty little thing, get away from me. He's thinking, how can I help this person make advancement? And Krishna will purify us. That's and the Sri Upanishad explains that he has these potencies like a prophylactic. That means antiseptic. Huh? Whatever comes in contact with it gets purified instantly. Yeah? So this is a positive thing. That's the one thing we can learn. Right? And the third thing, this is an inference based on what Maharaj has spoken about and also based on what I've read, is that we have to be very careful when we are interacting with the material energy, because she's very expert at making the worthless thing appear very valuable. Just like Putana is a witch, but she managed to bedazzle the Brajvasis. Of course, this is Krishna's plan. Prabhupada explains that in the summary of the purport, that it was by Krishna's grace that she was allowed to get past and enter Krishna's room. Krishna wanted that to happen because he wanted to purify her. He wanted to kill her. But still, we have to be very careful when we're dealing with the material energy, because Maya can catch us at any moment. Yeah? And how can we do that? How can we remain focused on Krishna and not get bewildered by Maya? We have to read and study the Shastras regularly, attentively. And we have to take full advantage of the association of devotees. Because unless and until we take full advantage of the association of devotees, Maya is always there waiting on the wings and she'll catch us any moment. Right? Just like in wildlife, you see hyenas or some wild animals, some predators, they generally do not approach the herd. They have a strategy where they try to get the weakest member of the herd isolated from the herd in order to pounce upon him. Like that. I don't know how many of you watch National Geography Channel or whatever, but this was, I used to like, and you see this regularly. When a lion wants to attack the bisons, they generally go for the weakest one. They run around and bewilder them, and then the weakest one is left behind and they catch him. But those ones that stay in the middle of the herd, surrounded by the most powerful bison, the lion cannot get in because he will get hurt. Right? So we also have to be like that. We have to know where we're at, and we have to know that how much support we require and take that support. This means that we have to reveal our minds to devotees. Somehow or other, we need some kind of guidance. We need to surround ourselves by advanced devotees. And whenever the mind is whispering something we're not sure about, we can go and double check those devotees. Because the moment we start to act independently, big trouble. Unless we're really advanced, like the pure devotees, where we can cross over the river, the Atlantic Ocean, go to another foreign land, be surrounded by non-devotees, materialistic people, and still remain focused on our chanting, we have to take shelter of advanced devotees. This is a very important point. So these are some of the points that this pastime is there to teach us. Some of them require churning in order to get them. Krishna will tell us within the heart. Some of them are very straightforward. But in either case, we have to remember these lessons and try to apply them in our day-to-day life. Because Bhagavatam is there for that, to guide us. Krishna swadamo pagate dharma jnana dibi saha kalonastam dushamesham puranarko dinodita. This Bhagavata Puran is as brilliant as the sun. And it has arisen to dispel the darkness of Kali, right? To guide the people who are in ignorance. So Bhagavatam is alive and soul, and every pastime, every page of the Bhagavatam is there full of instructions, and we have to be studying them regularly. And once we derive the instruction, we have to apply them. Because unless and until we apply these instructions, we apply these lessons in our day-to-day life, it's like having a great amount of wealth and not using it. Then what happens is that you die, and then your in-laws end up fighting over your money. So we have to take advantage of the Bhagavatam. And I'm very grateful that you've been given this opportunity, but Sripad Nandan Prabhu, to speak a few words, though I wasn't qualified. And I'm also very grateful that you tolerated my ramblings. So I'm a little bit over time, but because we had to wait for a few hours, if there's any questions or additions, I would welcome them.